Now, let's turn to our major story today and this week, the Bondi terrorism attack, and the questions that are being asked of the nation's intelligence agencies, from resourcing levels to information gathering. On the program yesterday, I spoke with the Australian Federal Police Association, which raised concerns about staffing with the federal government last month.
The AFP is really lean as it is right now. So we are already as short-funded as we can be, and investigations have already been compromised because of the short funding that the government is spending on federal policing.
That's the Australian Federal Police Association President Alex Caruana on the program yesterday. Dennis Richardson is one of Australia's most distinguished bureaucrats, a former Secretary of the Department of Defence and Foreign Affairs, and for 9 years, Director General of ASIO. Dennis Richardson, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Yeah, hi there, Mel.
Look, based on what we know so far and of the information that's in the public domain, can we tell if there has been a failure of intelligence agencies to pick up on these gunmen and prevent this attack?
Not yet. A few days after any terrorist attack, you always have far more questions than answers. I think it's very important not to rush to judgment. There may well have been a failure, or there may well have been a combination of failures. Equally, it is possible that ASIO made the right judgments at the right time. We simply don't know. You simply need to put a question mark over that, which is why there will need to be a major inquiry at some point.
There have been calls for a royal commission, perhaps most vocally by the former Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg. Do you think a royal commission or a commission of inquiry type of process is something that is necessary or helpful?
I'm agnostic in respect of a royal commission. They do take a long time, as the government has said. There is a tendency for governments to hide behind a royal commission and say there is action we can't take until we get the results of it. An inquiry of a different sort can move far more quickly and can give you quicker answers. So I think there's a balance there that needs to be struck. Equally, with a royal commission, you can require people to give evidence under oath, but I think there would be ways around that.
If I can just go to actions and reach of intelligence agencies here, obviously by the nature of the work that ASIO does, exactly how it operates and its extent isn't something that's really public knowledge. But there's definitely a lot of questions being asked publicly about, well, if someone who has previously been looked at for potentially connections to extremists, if that person then visits a terrorism hotspot around the world, isn't that the sort of thing a security agency would know about? Can you give us an understanding of the scope or the reach of what our intelligence agencies and our partner intelligence agencies overseas can and can't feasibly know in a structural sense?
Well, first of all, you've got to operate within the law. Secondly, you must operate within your own resource constraints. Therefore, you must make priorities and shift the resources where you believe the biggest threats are. Thirdly, you are always dealing with incomplete information. You are rarely dealing with an environment in which you know everything. So it's a bit of a human puzzle that you're dealing with. You need to ask yourself this: if ASIO in 2019 looked at one of the gunmen, and if they made a considered, proper assessment, and if they rightly came to a conclusion that he did not pose a threat to security, then you would need to ask yourself, why would he be on a movement alert list 5 years later? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know whether what sort of assessment they did in 2019. I don't know what conclusions they reached. And you would need to know that before you could make a decision about whether they should have put him on the movement alert list.
You said right at the beginning there's a lot that we don't know at this stage, and it's certainly possible that there could have been an intelligence failure or multiple failures. Do we also need to accept that there might just be cases where things slip through the cracks, and that's the result of living in a dangerous and dynamic world?
That is possible. Don't forget, intelligence agencies consist of people. People do make mistakes in all walks of life. You also have issues relating to technology here. Intelligence is done very differently today to what it was done in the past. So connectivity, sharing of databases and access of databases is very important between intelligence and law enforcement. That's improved enormously over the years. Where it is at precisely now, and whether there are any slip-ups there, would also be another line of inquiry.
So our relationships with our intelligence partners is a crucial piece of the jigsaw puzzle here.
Oh, yes.
On Radio National Breakfast, my guest is the former ASIO chief, Dennis Richardson. When it comes to curbing anti-Semitism, and looking at protecting social cohesion, that involves change at a cultural level. Is that harder in a globalised world when many of the influences might be coming from well beyond our borders?
Yes, it is hard, but there are certain lines here we should draw. It is totally unacceptable in 2025 that there are kids who go to certain schools in this country, Jewish schools, where there is a need for armed guards. It is totally unacceptable in this country that there are preschools with armed guards. That is something which, as a society, we ought to say is totally unacceptable, and we ought to address the issues sitting behind that. One of them is hate speech. There's no point in having legislation relating to hate speech unless it is enforced. And in recent years, it hasn't been enforced with the rigour that it should be.
Do you think that's because it's too hard to secure a successful prosecution with the way the laws are drafted? Or do you think there has not been enough desire to pursue those cases?
I don't know the reason, but it's not because they're too hard. Look at the case of about 18 months ago where one of the preachers, well known for his hate speech, was taken to the Human Rights Commission or the relevant tribunal by a member of the community, was found to be in breach of the law in several areas, and was made to do certain things as a result of that. Question: why did the government take that preacher to court? They passed the hate laws. They had the power to prosecute him. They didn't, and it fell to a member of the community to prosecute that individual. That, I think, is unacceptable, and that one example illustrates the fact that laws have been passed that have simply sat on the statute book for appearance sake.
There has been for many years now, across a couple of terms of Parliament, very politicised debates around religious discrimination laws and hate speech laws, about the extent of the reach that they should have. Do you think that has hampered the implementation of laws, even where there have been legislative changes?
I don't know. I would simply come back to my one example where a member of the community was able to take successful legal action, but the government sat on its hands and did nothing.
Can I also ask you, do you see a role for reassessing immigration as part of a response to this terrorist attack?
Certainly, I think in terms of the training given to immigration officers who interview potential migrants to this country, in terms of the depth of questioning in respect of people from certain conflict areas, I think there's certainly a question mark over that, and I think there is self-evidently a need to review how well we do that.
Dennis Richardson, I really appreciate your insights this morning. Thank you very much for joining me on Radio National Breakfast.
Pleasure, Mel.